This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. The QSR industry has been dramatically impacted by COVID-19. And some operators have fared much better than others for the simple reason that they had drive-through lanes. If the business relied on walk-in and dine-in traffic, they were in trouble. But if they had drive-through lanes with pre-sell and menu displays, they tended to make out okay. What might have been 70% of their business went up past 90%. Last week, I moderated a roundtable panel on digital signage and the QSR business, chatting for almost an hour with top people from companies active in this space, both vendors and end users. The Digital Signage Power Hour was hosted by Avixa and sponsored by StrataCash. I led a discussion with Dan Williams from StrataCash, who worked with McDonald's on its massive digital deployment, Sarah Grofsik of Samsung, who runs the QSR business there, Dave Petrasig of Ping HD, and Todd Hoffman, the digital lead for Krispy Kreme and the subject of a recent 69 podcast. The session starts with me rattling through some observations, and then we dive in. Avixa's Marcella Walsh can be heard at the back end answering some listener questions. Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. I'll kind of pile on what Dan was saying about the state of the economy. I did some quick research and it shows the restaurant industry in the United States this year is expected to lose $240 billion this year just because of COVID. It's been very, very rough. It's been particularly rough for sit-down restaurants and less so for the QSR industry and to some degree in fast casual. Those companies that had drive-through in place already or other elements of digital have certainly fared better. I'm sure if you follow the QSR industry at all, you've heard talk about how drive-through accounts for 70% of the business in some cases, like for McDonald's and other operations like that. That went up to like 90-95%, all the way up to near 100% of business, because that's the only way they could do trade. You weren't allowed to go into the dining area. And it became a particular problem for those chains that didn't really rely on drive-through typically. A great example of that would be something like Shake Shack, which is a burger chain. They have seen their business drop anywhere from 25 to all the way up to 65% during COVID. It's been extremely rough on them. But what they're doing and what other companies are now doing, like Chipotle, are they're adding drive-through and they're adding other digital capabilities to deal with that. So you're going to see a lot more of that in the future in terms of using digital signage in, you know, various ways to kind of help them drive the business. It's also been a bit of a problem. And one of the reasons we invited Ping HD on this was you have sports and entertainment venues who have concessions, and Ping is very strong in that particular area. And that's taken a big hit because we're not seeing live events. So we've got a great panel to talk about all this today. And first of all, we've got Dan, obviously, he's introduced himself. We have Sarah Grofsik from Samsung, who leads the company's very busy QSR practice. We have Todd Hoffman, who runs in-store digital for Krispy Kreme, the donut chain. And we have Dave Petrasig from Ping HD, companies based out of Denver. So guys, why don't you all hit your video and hit your mics and join in. And while they're doing that, I'll ask Dan, what are you seeing out in the marketplace? Who's thriving? Who's been really challenged by all of this?
You know, that's a great question. And I think as I said earlier, the ones that are thriving the most are the ones who have drive-through down pat. They have the ability to reset their kitchens. They have the operations in place. They have the people in place to really meet that increased need in drive-through, right? So those are the companies that continue, who have always excelled in drive-through and will continue. I think the other companies who have offered drive-through as a service, but maybe not quarter their business, I'll use Panera as an example of that. That's a restaurant group here in the U.S. While they offered drive-through, their sites were never really built to maximize drive-through. Their kitchens were really never set up to support large volume demand through the drive-through. So they're now in a position where they really need to restructure what they're doing, not only outside, but also inside to meet that increased demand. And for customers who are expecting a certain amount of speed of service and attention to detail and order accuracy, you're going to see a company like that that's going to struggle until they really start to get it right more than that.
And Sarah, it's one thing to say, well, just add drive-through. It's quite another thing to actually do it, right? It's nowhere near that simple.
Of course. And it's actually, you and I've had this conversation before, Dave. People who already have drive-through, you know, that they were using it for, as you said, you know, 70%, 50% of their current business. But then when COVID hit, they had the opportunity to turn drive-through into a communication platform for their customers. So we've seen, you know, a lot of customers that were already making the digital transformation right before COVID, maybe go a little bit on hold or maybe accelerate a little bit quicker. But we actually have seen a lot of different boutique brands and additional companies that necessarily weren't looking at a digital transformation just yet, go ahead and make the plunge or go ahead and dip their toe in the water and start testing digital. Not only just because of the content, but the fact that they can communicate with the drive-through, with their customers. They're able to say, listen, our store hours are changing, or this store is going to be temporarily shut down for a week. Go visit our other location off of 57th Street. So it became a platform for them to provide content, provide communication, give updates. And with a lot of those companies that have went ahead and made the transformation during COVID, they're seeing that, okay, the drive-through is a start, but then they're starting to update the indoors as well. So they're actually starting to get more on the wagon for digital transformation, and that it's truly helping their business cultivate to this new norm that we have.
I suspect there's been a lot of tire kickers that you guys have all talked to who've, you know, been thinking about doing this, but yeah, you know, kick it down the road to next year. Then all this happened and they're thinking, oh man, we really should have pulled the trigger on this last year.
Sure. You're right. And we've actually, I think all of us on this call have had customers or, you know, longtime customers that have said, okay, let's try this, or let's start looking at curbside. We may not have drive-through. Let's see if we can dabble in the curbside and look at mobile app integration. What can we do to try to keep our business going and still provide some type of service to our customers out there? So I believe that there's been a lot of different brilliant ideas that have cultivated since COVID. Some of them maybe not have always taken off, but there's been a lot of different platforms that I think all of our customers have been asking to any type of ideas that can keep their doors open at this time. How can they provide some type of service to the economy out there?
And Todd, you have this interesting situation where you've opened a new restaurant with all kinds of digital in it, and you're involved in QSR intensely these days. Yep. You opened a flagship store right in the heart of Manhattan in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah, no drive-through going on there, but
not in Times Square.
Yeah, certainly, you know, our brand is all about personalization and, you know, entertainment, I'd say, and living up to expectations. And there's such a passion for Krispy Kreme donuts that to say you're opening a flagship, you really have to step up. So we have, you know, gone gangbusters inside and outside with digital there in terms of projection. Knowing we were going on Broadway, we created a show that happens every 12 minutes, but lots of digital boards. The one takeaway is we wanted people to enjoy the digital experience, but not feel like they were inundated with digital. It had to be integrated and holistic with our core experience that goes back 83 years.
And just for those people who may not know about it, this is a store right on one of the main corners in Times Square with all kinds of digital going on, right from an LED, very large LED header board over the store. Was a giant hot sign of some kind and on and on and on?
16-foot hot sign, largest we've ever done. Instead of trying to compete head on with all the other digital in the square. We just created the world's largest hot sign, and all it does is light and rotate. And because we're always making donuts, it's always on. And it really does stand up. But in other ways, we have 130-foot wraparound digital screen that complements the store as well as the rotating hot light.
Dave, sports and entertainment venues are different, obviously, from a regular QSR, but it's food services. People are going up to an order counter. They're seeing a menu board. They're ordering stuff. What has happened through all of this that's different, and how are these kinds of operations adjusted? Because now, I mean, the World Series starts tonight, and there's, as far as I know, at least as of 2:19 this afternoon, they're letting people into the game tonight.
Yeah, we've seen a mixture of things. I mean, we have, you know, at least two dozen NFL, Major League Baseball, NHL, and NBA customers who have 100, 200, 300, 400 licenses per stadium. And unfortunately, some of them, you know, made the decision early on that they weren't going to have fans. So, you know, we saw those networks go dark. Others decided they were going to open their stadium, let fans in, like in the NFL. You know, we didn't see any fans in Major League Baseball until the postseason or until later in the postseason. But, you know, we've had several teams in the NFL who needed help to be ready. And, you know, we even landed a brand new customer, the Kansas City Chiefs. And we had to help, with Samsung's help, put, you know, over 120 or 150 displays in Arrowhead Stadium, and completed that installation literally almost the morning of NFL kickoff that Thursday night. And luckily helped them get all the content up and running, so they had a good fan experience. So it's been a mixture of both. You know, we've seen different things happen on the QSR side, but, you know, the sports and entertainment side has been pretty difficult.
Yeah, I bet. If you are going to use drive-through, this is kind of an age-old question, and I know how you'll answer it, but maybe people listening may not, is why do I need a digital screen and a digital pre-sell display in my drive-through lanes? Why can't I just use a printed poster? Dan?
Sure. No, I'd be more than happy to go ahead. And I think all of us have our opinions on it. But mm-hmm. I mean, really, we see that digital, I mean, it's, the screens are the on-ramp for different technology and use cases through the drive-through. It helps with customization. In fact, digital mm-hmm. helps actually speeding up the order. So it helps people get through the line faster. So I mean, there's lots of different reasons. We all have our own. But really, to me, the technology is just the on-ramp for various different software packages and solutions that can be offered. It can help with predicting an order. It can help give options. Let's say that we're also in a situation where we're running out of a certain product. You can then, you know, displace it pretty quickly and add something else. If we're wanting to promote something a little bit differently, it's easier for a click of a button versus having to print and change the menu. And it also does take a lot of the crew time to go out there and change the menu. If you have day partings and you've got breakfast and you're going to lunch, that's going to take somebody's time to go out there and change the menu. So that's my opinion. Obviously, I could talk for hours about why digital and the drive-through, but, you know, from my standpoint, that's those are a few hot topics on my side.
Dan?
Sure. And just to complement that, because that's a question, probably the most primary question that gets asked when we're talking to a customer about developing a business case or ROI, right?
Because it's expensive. I mean, this is not this is not putting a TV out there. It's like,
you know,
there's a lot involved.
You know, there's maybe somewhere along the way, we'll get into the conversation, the economics behind all this too, right? When we talk about franchisee, you know, expenses and kind of who pays for that and how these things all get financed and stuff like that. But oftentimes a customer will ask me that and I'll say, you know, there's two main factors, customer relevancy. And I'm always going to make it about the customer because that's what I do, because the customer is at the center of everything, right? And communication, marketing, agility, right? Customers, I wouldn't say it's ubiquitous wherever they go digital signage, but it's getting there, right? And mm-hmm. so customers are looking for a more relevant form of communication because it says a lot about the brand and it says a lot about the type of information that they're receiving. But on the client side, their agility, their ability to bob and weave with what and when and how they want to communicate with consumers actually puts that at the cornerstone. It's very difficult to have that kind of agility on a print-based format, really. And even the print-based formats have become cheaper and cheaper along the way, but there still is that physical labor involved. But your ability to have the agility to focus on certain products, focus on certain day parts, focus on certain customers really lie at the cornerstone of why a pre-sell or a digital menu board is going to give you the bandwidth that you're going to need in order to really help move your business. Right? And again, customer relevancy too, I think is key as it relates back to the brand.
And let's just explore that a little bit. What do you mean by relevancy? I mean, I know what the word means, but.
You know, a customer would go through a drive-through that is worn and tattered and may have had the same print-based menu board there for the last 10, 15 years, right? And drive-through equipment takes a beating, right? It's just, it gets old really, really quick, right? Mm-hmm. Time in with age. But when a customer goes through the drive-through and they see new signage, new digital signage, new ways of communicating, new ways of bringing the product to life, it makes it more relevant for them. They feel closer to the brand. They feel the brand is being more relevant and more up to date. And I think the digital signage helps bring that to life for the customer. And it certainly has an impact on their brand preference as well.
I'd agree with Dan. For me, the preview screen is really the game changer more than, you know, replacing our static menu boards with other menu boards, just because throughput, you know, in the COVID era, we have such a backup that has developed in our line. And that's really the number one tool that would help us, in order accuracy, would help us expedite the line, helping people think about their order before they get up to the microphone. The one thing to add is in New York City and Times Square, we actually stole from that playbook. And in our queue inside the shop, we have a preview board, so that people can start thinking while they're waiting in line before they even get to the menu boards. So we're taking some of the best of drive-through and actually bringing it inside the store, again, with throughput and the customer experience as kind of number one and two in our book.
And the throughput is just a simple math equation of the more people you can pound through that drive-through lane in an hour, more the higher revenues you're going to see, right?
Absolutely. Yep. And the takeaway, I mean, if you've been in line for 45 minutes, you know, you'll still wait around for the donuts, but will you do it again next time? Right? And if we can get you through faster, it's a much more pleasant experience, one that you're more likely to repeat.
Dan spoke about relevancy. One of the things that's started to emerge in the last couple of years, particularly driven by, you know, the monster account out there, McDonald's, is using artificial intelligence and machine learning to do menu optimization customer by customer by customer. McDonald's even bought a company from Israel to do that. And I know that Stratacash has one of its member companies that does that sort of work. What's involved there and what's the return on it? And I'll go to Dan on that.
You know, it's a growing type of technology, right? And we'll talk about crawl, walk, run, right? So as you start to incorporate all those data points, right? Who's using your drive-through? When they're using your drive-through? How they're using your drive-through? You start to incorporate all that so you can better position your menu to the ordering habits of your customer based on when they're using your location, right? So you can focus on the products that they're most interested in, given a certain period of the day or the type of day that's going on. And so that helps you with throughput in the kitchen because you're really focused on those products that customers are buying. You're going to sell more of them. You're going to be able to make them quicker and you're going to be able to get people through, right? And then also you're being, again, this relevancy back to the consumer. You know me, you recognize me, maybe not on a one-on-one basis right now, but you're having a better idea of what I need at a certain time of the day or based on the type of consumer that I am. So you're able to meet their needs on a one-on-one basis as opposed to a many-to-one basis, which drive-through was kind of known on, right? You just kind of put it all out there and let people decide mm-hmm. what that they're going to order and take one at a time. But now you're moving away from that and you're being able to pinpoint communication to them based on who they are, when they're using your location, and how they're using. So, and it, as that data continues to build, you'll be able to do more and more with it down the way.
So this is like way, way beyond day part menus or anything else.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, but there still is the security factor that you have to be, you know, you're not able to identify people one on one, but you can certainly identify how many people are in a car because now you're dealing with a group order, right? You'll be able to identify whether it's a male or a female placing that order. So you have a general idea through all this data acquisition and information, how best to formulate information and menus back to them that kind of meet their needs based on what. And then as this continues to grow, whether it's LinkedIn with the loyalty programs and things like that, you'll be able to do more and more with it down the road. So some people ask, why get into digital now? The footprint is critical, but it's also going to give you the baseline in which you'll be able to grow your business based on AI needs and provisioning down the road.
So even spending that kind of money, if you're even seeing an uplift of an additional 1% in average ticket size or order size, that's like real money, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you think about what it takes in order to move the needle just using traditional media, right? Mm-hmm. If you can grow your business 1-3% just using media, imagine if you can now invest those dollars, which are kind of gone 30 days after that advertising is run, more into a hardware investment and continue to capitalize on that 1-2% incremental growth on sales. That's just money well spent.
So that's McDonald's doing that sort of thing. Is this the sort of technology that really any QSR, whether they're regional or just, you know, a chain with 10 locations in one city, is it the sort of technology that maybe not today, but at some point reasonably soon, they could adapt?
Certainly, because, you know, the software is out there, right? The software and the matrices and the algorithms have already been developed in order to be able to capitalize on these things. So yes, it's great if I own 20 McDonald's or 200 McDonald's, or, you know, I'm running a network of 14,000. Those same applications are adaptable to the small business owner, the medium-sized business owner, because they're going to continue to do that. You know, I think if you go back and you look at the pizza business, they were by far ahead of the curve for most people. Because when you think about the traditional pizza business, a big part of the success of a pizza business is knowing who their customers are and what they prototypically order, right? And even before COVID, even before digital menu boards, even before, you know, AI analytics, the value in a pizza company was knowing who their customers were and what their customer base was. And so they kind of locked down on that from the early beginning, knowing how to best meet their customers' needs and keeping all that information in-house so you know how to service.
Right? And Sarah and Dave, you guys both talk, I'm sure, to a lot of QSR operators. Are they bringing this technology up as something they want to do, or are they looking at it and saying, well, that's McDonald's, you know, we don't have several hundred million dollars to enact this ourselves?
Yeah, sure. From our standpoint, we've had various customers and to what Dan said, to all different sizes. It's not just the McDonald's of the world that wants to play in this arena. It's the small to medium ones as well, the more unique or boutique brands. So it's everyone who's looking to scale this type of customization. So yes, they actually, you know, they see that digital is an on-ramp for a different technology, but the end goal is to get to this rhythm of having mobile app integration with their loyalty program and learning more about their customer base. Because if they learn more, they're able to provide more customizations to their customers, which will then have them return even faster. I mean, that's the goal. But yes, we've seen multiple QSRs ask for this type of technology and solution. So it's not just the major large brands. It's all across the board.
And do they need to have data science capabilities or anything, or is it one of these situations where the vendor and, you know, outside contractors can kind of pull this together for them without them worrying about their heads exploding trying to learn it all?
That's a good point. And Dan, all of us, Dave, we've all had these conversations with clients. There's multiple solutions out there, so it's really just depending on how it needs to scale, what's the size of the project, what they're all wanting to include. So there's solutions where the customers can be completely hands-on, or they can be hands-off and let a company come in and pretty much just project manage everything for it and customize the entire application. So it's truly up to how the customers want it. Are they wanting to be involved and help with a lot of the analytics and what does it look like? or do they just say, this is what I want, but I want someone else to kind of manage it and just give me the assets back. Let me know the reporting and what's working and what's not working. So there's all sorts of different solutions out there that can scale to what the customer is looking for, how involved they want to be and how not involved they want to be, kind of a little bit more hands off and have it be a solution that can stand up on its own.
We're seeing the same thing, Dave. I mean, whether it's from, you know, a QSR with 10 locations or 50 locations or 200 locations or bigger. But the key is, especially from a CMS perspective, in my opinion, is to be make sure that you're willing and working with a CMS partner who has done the API software integration into that analytics platform, has either done it or is willing to do it to be able to trigger the right content. Because, you know, there are still many facets of our industry that are fragmented, right? You have the display guys, the kiosk guys, the wall mount guys, you have the analytic people, you have the CMS companies, but it's all of us working together to provide the complete solution. And if the CMS platform hasn't done or isn't willing to do that API software integration to trigger the appropriate content, then it's not going to work.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
Well, you have an interesting perspective. And like these folks who are selling stuff, you're buying stuff and speccing stuff, yeah, and hearing the pitch from all kinds of different companies. What's important to you and what do you think is important to your kind of brethren of other people who are doing the same role for other QSR companies? What do you want to hear and how do you want to work with them? Because I hear more and more that companies are asking for single source or a turnkey solution provider who's going to pull the whole thing together for them because they don't have the time, the energy, or the knowledge to kind of cherry pick and find all the right things to make this whole thing work.
I break it into two halves. One is the physical setup and structure of the drive-through. We have currently a pilot of 5 digital drive-throughs. And first and foremost is getting it right from the customer standpoint. The audio, the visual. And that's actually been a challenge there. But we definitely want to get that right before we get into the kind of higher math of it all of personalization and tying to our loyalty program. That's definitely something we are gearing up for. And I'd say we'll be using 2021 to figure out the drive-through experience of the future. Unfortunately, because the sooner we get to digital drive-through, the sooner we get the payback. But it's such a big investment. We want to make sure we get it right, both on the physical side and make sure we have the setup technologically to optimize its ability to personalize and connect with our best customers.
I'm curious about the displays. I know that's just one component, but it's a significant component when it comes to the drive-through side of things. The last time I was at a trade show when we all did those things, I was wandering around ISE in Amsterdam and amazed by the number of outdoor display enclosure companies. And I'm curious, particularly from Sarah, how does an end user or a solutions provider who maybe doesn't do this every day, but has a client who wants them to take a look at drive-through displays, how do they sort out what's good, what's not, what's important, what's not, all those kinds of things? Because they can all say we're IP blank blank rated, we're daylight ready, or we're bright in X number of lumens and so on, but that's not necessarily going to get you to the right answer.
Sure. And when you really look at drive-through, it's, you've got the screens, you're right, the enclosure, you've got the content piece. All of these pieces have to work together to obviously give the end goal, which is the digital menu board and the solutions that are embedded with it. So when it comes to the enclosure itself, it truly depends. There's lots of partners, the CMS partners that have their content. And depending on how they display their content, if it's through media players, if it's through embedded players of the screens itself, they have a certain capacity of how that player needs to sit. Sometimes they're inside the store, sometimes they're outside in the drive-thru. So a lot of those partners already have integrations with fabricators that make the enclosure piece. So that has already been partnered, already vetted out between those two organizations. You then also have the end user that has a look and feel in mind. They want it to look a certain way. They have a height requirement. They may want a pre-sale board. They may want speaker mic embedded. So there's all various different questions out there that the end user and specifications that they may have that need to be met. And then really when you're speccing out the drive-through, it's all of these different aspects and companies getting together to make sure whatever is being customized for that client is the right solution. It doesn't necessarily have to be cookie cutter, one size fits all for all the clients. Every client's going to be completely different depending on how all the solutions are integrating, depending on the content piece, depending on which display you get, depending on the enclosure itself. They're all going to look different. So what McDonald's may do, it may look a little bit different than what Starbucks does or other companies out there. So it's all moving pieces. It's not a one size fits all. But again, to kind of sum it up, the partners may already have some relationships with the fabricators, but then the end users also may already have a look and feel that they want to incorporate it. So there's a lot of different variables when you're actually designing the drive-through piece.
And you also have to think about the infrastructure, right? That there's the display and there's all the electronics components, but you have to think about the cost of trenching out to get power out to the drive-through and concrete and on and on and on, right? And that can add a lot of cost, right?
Oh, it absolutely can. So, and again, each location, each brand's going to be different. Some of them have them hardwired. Some are actually playing with Wi-Fi through the drive-through. So if it's a new drive-through, it's different because you're laying foundation, you're laying the conduit, it's completely different. If you're revamping a drive-through and you're adding digital, that's going to look a little bit different. So all of these pieces and parts and all the really the players that are outfitting ODMB, outdoor digital menu boards, have to come together and work together to build out a customization for the client. So again, a drive-through that's being remodeled is going to look completely different than a new build where you're laying concrete the first time. But there's obviously cost involved, and that's part of all of our jobs when we're talking with our clients is to try to figure out what's the best way possible for them and obviously try to save some money. I mean, it's a long-term investment. It's a heavy investment. So we want to make sure that it's done right and that all of our clients are happy with, you know, the whole program that everyone builds in place for it.
Now, I've heard about curbside display and curbside pickup and how this is going to be added to a lot of businesses, not only QSR, but in retail in general. Is the buyer public, all of these operators, mentally conditioned to the idea of adding another display enclosure outside and the cost associated with that to say, you know, Bob, your order is ready, please pick up here, that sort of thing? Or how is that going to work?
So my perspective, my opinion is that a lot of the clients that we've seen, let's take drive-through out. Let's look at just, you know, chained restaurants, other avenues that necessarily do not have a drive-through. A lot of them have been asking, saying, you know, we need a screen. And some of them were saying, we want it to be something that is completely embedded in the ground. And we want something that's on wheels that we can bring in and out. It's going to depend on what's going on with our days and how we're opening. So how flexible can you be? What are the different offerings you can provide to us? We also have a lot of different restaurants that are even retail that are saying, we can't really do curbside. We can't put a screen out there. You know, maybe something that we have to do with permitting. Let's put that screen inside. Is there anything you've got within the in window? We have static POP. Can we make it digital? Is there anything that we can provide there? So for curbside, we've looked at actually screens outside, and we've also looked at screens within inside facing out towards the street. So when you've got at that point, you can do a lot of customer and mobile app integration. So when you drive up, you know, Dave, you go in line 5 or lane 5, we'll bring you your food, or it pulls you up and it knows you're there. You know, hello, Dave. Your order will be ready in 5 minutes. We'll bring it to your car. So they're trying to make sure that there's some type of communication to the customers so they can provide some type of real fast production to all the different clients that are, you know, putting in orders. But how can we make a drive-through without having a drive-through? We've got a parking lot. What else can we do? We can do curbside. We also, for the different restaurants, we can do pickup and mobile ordering. And how can we communicate with the customers that are driving up? So we've seen a lot of different projects come into play for curbside and in window. And again, right. And it's incorporating what the loyalty Instagram or online ordering? How can we just communicate out to the customers that are coming through?
Anybody else's perspective?
I've even seen a number of opportunities when restaurants were finally allowed to reopen, whether it was outdoor service or finally when indoor service came back to some extent, depending on your capacity, we were starting to hear opportunities for traditional sandwich board like digital sign display. Okay, that could be wheeled in and out just to the curb because they didn't have room in the window, you know, for that kind of display or room behind the counter or the money for the investment for that matter. But they were willing to spend something to put out on the curb just to draw attention instead of trying to print something at Pinko's or what have you, you know, to try and put that in the window. So we were seeing a number of those types of opportunities as well. And it wasn't primarily for menu boards. It was more for the fact of just letting drivers, you know that they're open to draw in attention, to draw customers back in.
Todd, with your store in Times Square, and I know that there's a whole bunch of Krispy Kreme stores out there, but this one is all based around experience and, you know, you've got scheduled shows and the whole nine yards. But is there a more broad sort of approach to how you deliver experience in a QSR from the point of view of the screens you use, the messaging that's in there, and what are you trying to convey?
From a digital standpoint, where we're early in the game, and again, we're in a pilot phase, both interior and exterior. We've got 20 shops with interior boards. So we're learning. What we're trying to master is the use of animation and link it to analytics so that we can confirm the lift. Right now, we're building the business case for digital menu boards, both internally and externally. And we have to tie it to numbers. At the moment, it's difficult. But again, our first phase was let's get the physical components in place and let's get the kinks out. And then let's kind of move in with menu engineering to kind of optimize. And then when we are able to show it on our current set of boards, that's when we'll have the confidence to roll out much more broadly. Mm.
One of the big shifts that seemed to be happening in the QSR industry was a move to self-service ordering through touchscreen kiosks, that sort of thing. Then COVID hit and there was at least initially a worry that nobody's going to want to ever touch a screen again. What's actually happening in the, if the stores are accessible to go inside and do ordering, are touchscreens being used? Are they being shut down or what? Because I've certainly heard that self-service ordering is still very valid because it enables you to not require a one-to-one conversation with somebody at an order counter.
So this is Dan. I'll tell you what I've seen. I've seen some sites that only have kiosk ordering, that there really is no one at the front counter except someone who may be there to answer a question or bring the food out to you, right? Mm-hmm. And that could have a lot to do with labor. That could have a lot to do with order accuracy. That could have a lot to do with what customers are most comfortable with. You know, in some cases, people don't want to come in contact with another person. So they feel more comfortable using a screen in which to place their order as opposed to having to interact with a person, right? And while my opinion was that customers were slow to adapt to the kiosk ordering, they've now overcome that and are seeing it as the mainstay of their ordering protocol when they come into a location, right? It's something that they've become more used to. It's something that meets their general needs better. And I think the operations of the restaurants are more gearing towards that now, as opposed to having it as kind of an added extra.
What? I think Dan's right, but what we've noticed is those QSR customers aren't turning off those displays behind the counter. You know, even though there might not be people behind the counter working, they're not turning them off or they're not holding back from purchasing if they haven't before, because it's still where most people will look to see what's on the menu. You know, maybe all the self-service kiosks are busy, or just out of pure habit, you're going to walk into that restaurant and immediately look to the counter and look behind the counter. And we've seen on our networks for some of our larger QSR customers, they're using some of that space to convey information about COVID-19 protocol to make sure customers feel safe when they walk in. here's what we're doing. This is, you know, how we're preparing the food. This is how often we're cleaning and so on and so forth. So it's not like people are turning off the displays behind the counter, but I think, you know, Dan's right. People are becoming more accustomed to just walking up to self-service, or maybe there isn't somebody behind the counter to take the order.
Yeah, I you know, just to echo that too, I think that that media channel called a menu board now, you know, I think the days of thinking of it as a menu board are kind of passe for me. I think it's more critical as a media channel in which to connect with the customer, because you can do so much more with it now than you used to be able to, what a prototypical menu board used to be used for, right? So it's really, for those who really see the insight and the value of it, can almost see it as an extension of their media plan, quite honestly, as well as the utilitarian purpose of serving it as a menu board per se.
Right.
Yeah, I my comments is regarding the kiosk and the digital boards inside. I do think that we're going to continue seeing an uptick of kiosk, and absolutely to the point that people are, they've gotten used to the fact of ordering on kiosk and self-ordering, mobile app integration. But behind the counters, we're still going to see the digital menu boards, or we're going to see them transform and change a bit and maybe have more order status boards, mobile app ordering. So then they're still communicating. They're still using those boards to give real-time updates. And it may be tied into the kiosk that they just placed an order on. So there's still going to be a, you know, some type of process with the menu boards that are installed right now, or future boards that get installed behind the counters.
All right, Marcella, we've got a number of questions kind of queued up. Do you want to run through them?
I do. So John is asking, are there any technology solutions for a restaurant location that cannot physically build a drive-thru?
Sure, I'll go ahead and start answering that one. So of course, I mean, this goes along to the conversation we were talking about, curbside pickup. There's obviously, if you do not have a drive-through, do you have available? Is it just, you know, there's limited parking? Could we put a sign outside? Could we help with the mobile app or loyalty app integration to try to provide some type of customization? So there's tons of ideas out there. If you don't physically have a drive-through, you could do the in-window ordering. You could do the curbside pickup of the screen and provide real-time updates, or even build a limited menu on the screen. And as you know, Dave mentioned earlier, that you can, it can be portable. You can put it on wheels. You can move it in and out. It doesn't necessarily have to be something that's installed 100% into the ground. There's a lot of flexibility in screens and the enclosures nowadays about what can be pulled and be more mobile.
I even saw in doing a little bit of reading, there was a small chain that does, I think they're focused on chicken salad, which seemed a little odd, but they did not have drive-throughs. So they put temporary tents, like marquee tents, out in their parking lot and staffed it with people with POS-based tablets so they could do ordering right there. So it was a hack, but it was a way for them to do business.
So Tom is asking, have there been any configuration changes the last few months? For example, have there been more displays using external players, BrightSign, Ping, Intel, NUC, et cetera, or integrated player systems?
We haven't really seen any changes. I mean, if you look at licenses that we have out there, it's primarily on system on chip display, you know, especially for menu boards. I mean, whether it's drive-through or behind the counter. You know, the memory, you know, the chip built inside the Samsung, you know, whether it's the, you know, OHF for outdoor or QMR for indoor, you know, that built-in chip for, you know, no external media player does the job just fine. So we haven't, like, seen any changes in that, you know, pre-pandemic or during the pandemic.
I think if I could just chime in for the value of an internal or external media player, when you start to take a look at some of these really large networks who need customization down to the site, right? Even McDonald's, it's 14,000. It may be a collection of 14,000 units, but there's still individual locations that need to be able to manage their content on a dayparting basis, on a specific menu basis, and things like that. And then given the rise of expectations from a creative standpoint on what the brands want to do and what they want to be able to express back to their customers, we're seeing that those media players continue to play a very intricate and integral role in being able to give spot on level content distribution to those locations.
Yeah, I would, from my comment, I would say with there being various different brands of screens out there, you know, there's different capabilities from each manufacturer. To Dave's point, you know, the system on a chip is something that we see very niche, and we see it that it's absolutely a way that you can provide customized content and that robust content. You can actually provide video. So there's a lot that you can do on people's embedded or external. So to me, it's really going to come down to what the preference of the customer is. There's all sorts of different avenues. So it's really going to depend on what the customer is comfortable with. If it's something that they've utilized in the past, we see that that's been part of, you know, their future. But it's truly just something that it comes down to the customer's level of how they want to integrate. Both options are available. Both have pluses to them. So to me, it's really just to the customer. We haven't seen any really changes on our side either to answer the question, though.
Ralph is asking, what percentage of drive-through restaurants have been digitized?
He's looking for free research.
I would have to say for that one, we would have to get back to him, because it's going to depend on the, are we looking at just the context of during COVID? Are we looking at in general? We've seen a lot of businesses that are piloting. Some have decided to go ahead and make the transformation. But at this time, I think it'd be a little hard to give an overall number to that.
I think it'd be a fair assessment or statement to say that it's certainly accelerated in the last couple of years. And a lot of that is driven by the big guys like the McDonald's, mm-hmm. kind of completing their full estate of locations with drive-through. And that kind of tells the other operators, well, if they're doing it, we should do it too. Is that a fair statement?
That I would most on from my side, and I know that Dan and Dave and Todd obviously have their opinions as well, but yes, it's one of those things. Over the years, we've seen digital completely pick up. If the context again is during COVID or in the last, you know, 12 months, that's something that we need to take a look at. But we're seeing more drive-throughs, more indoor moving towards a digital platform. So yes, the big guys have done it, but we also are seeing more of the boutique brands as well. It's a platform for them, not just to showcase the menu board, but to bring other technologies and communication skills to their customers. So it's certainly something that we see a trend that it continues to move up. And we do expect that there's going to be other areas within the restaurant and retail that will go digital as well. We were looking at, you know, we're talking about static POP earlier. We see that moving more digital. What's in the back of the house? Crew communication board. So there's a lot of different aspects to the stores in general that have been moving more to a digital platform.
And I would just echo that as well, because I think even though some of the larger players, you know, whether it's Burger King, whether it's McDonald's, whomever it may be, now Taco Bell, right, are moving more towards this larger digital footprint, I think it's moved beyond screen envy, right? They need it, so I got to have it. So I think the mindset of moving beyond screen envy is kind of sailed away. And I think people are now focused on the technology and asking, what can this do for me? Because I only have so much money to spend. How do I invest my dollars smart? Fragmentation, what should I be doing with those customers who I have in my location to not only influence them while they're there, but also influence them in a way to whereas I can get them coming back again. So it's about how do I invest my dollars to really have the biggest impact on my customers moving forward, and where are those dollars best placed, right? Which used to be traditional media models, but that's now being rethought because how customers are using locations and how critical it is to impress them while you have them on your location.
Todd, I think you wanted to.
Well, yeah, our path forward is definitely digital. Any new shops that we're opening will be digital. Remodels are going digital. It's looking at our existing shops and going backwards and pulling out the static to replace it with digital. That's where we're going to have the hardest time with the math. And probably going to be the slowest, but definitely going forward, it's all arguments are there for installing digital over more static.
I think we probably have time for one more question.
So this question comes from Robert. It says, out here on the West Coast at In-N-Out, he's seen the digital signage systems overwhelmed, and their solution is to deploy an army of employees with Wi-Fi tablets to collect orders and quicken the lines and throughput.
Yeah, you know, but ironically here in Chicago, and I'm not going to name names, but there's a chain that has probably 50 locations that does a lot of Italian beef sandwiches, has no menu boards, no digital menu boards, no digital outdoor, but has, an army of people moving a line through the drive-through with tablets like you can't believe.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.